This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa's live coverage of the U.S. election this week. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and my colleague Lenore Demudu is here with me in our Washington studio. Donald Trump has won the U.S. presidential election and will return to the White House in January. Here's what's coming up.
I don't think it's going to be easy. You have to keep fighting.
That was Trump supporter Renee White saying she thinks the president-elect will have to maintain his fighting spirit as other supporters celebrate his victory. We hear from our reporters about the night's events, and experts talk about likely foreign policy changes. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Donald Trump, who served as president from 2017 to 2021, will return to the White House next January.
And frankly, this was, I believe, the greatest political movement of all time. There's never been anything like this in this country, and maybe beyond. And now it's going to reach a new level of importance because we're going to help our country heal. We're going to help our country heal. We have a country that needs help, and it needs help very badly. We're going to fix our borders. We're going to fix everything about our country. And we made history for a reason tonight, and the reason is going to be just that. We overcame obstacles that nobody thought possible, and it is now clear that we've achieved the most incredible political thing. Look what happened. Is this crazy?
That was Trump giving a victory speech to jubilant supporters last night in Florida. Trump, the Republican Party's candidate, has secured at least 277 Electoral College votes, well over 270 needed to defeat the Democratic Party rival, Vice President Kamala Harris. Under the U.S. system, in which states are granted Electoral College votes based on the size of their congressional delegations, it takes 270 electoral votes to win the presidency.
It was a long night for the presidential candidates and their supporters. Donald Trump's camp spent the night at Palm Beach County, Florida. VOA senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutti was at the election night celebration in Florida, where Trump celebrated his win before most news networks had decided the race.
The next president of the United States is a familiar one.
I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president.
Former President Donald Trump waited more than 7 hours after the polls closed on the East Coast to address his followers.
It's time to put the divisions of the past 4 years behind us. It's time to unite.
Supporters were always confident, despite polls showing a razor-thin difference between Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. Steve McGuire's wife made 10,000 calls for Trump during the campaign.
I think a lot of people are just tired of what's going on in the country. Just everything's up. Food, fuel, housing.
Aaliyah Weber is from Florida.
I like the 4 years we had under Trump prior, and I'm hoping we can get back to that.
After Trump achieved the required 270 electoral votes, the red wave continued in the U.S. Senate as the Republicans took the majority. It's been a brutally long campaign, with Trump surviving two assassination attempts. A bullet in July grazed his ear, leaving an iconic image of the presidential candidate mouthing, "Fight, fight, fight." Renee White was sitting behind him that day in Butler, Pennsylvania, and she was in West Palm Beach election night. She says Trump needs to keep that attitude these next 4 years.
I don't think it's going to be easy. You have to keep fighting.
It's almost as if this crowd knew from the beginning that their man would win again. These are the hats that were given out as people walked into this election night party. On the back, Trump, with 45 and 47 written on the side. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, West Palm Beach, Florida.
VOA national correspondent Steve Herman is in Gwinnett County in the southern state of Georgia, and we have him on the line to give us an overview. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
A pleasure to be back.
So, Steve, the race was expected to be closer than it turned out, especially in states like Georgia, which is what's called a swing state. What appears to have led the Trump victory?
Well, I think what appears to have led to... Hello?
Go ahead.
Yes, I think what appears to have led to a Trump victory was people being upset about the economy more than anything else. And while they may not have liked Donald Trump, they decided that they would put that aside and that he would be the best person to handle America's economic woes.
How many of the seven key swing states did Trump ultimately carry?
Well, we still don't know the answer to that because we're waiting for official results from out west, Arizona and Nevada. But he is leading out there. He obviously took it in Georgia. And then the blue wall also shattered, which were these so-called Rust Belt states. And while Kamala Harris performed, pretty well, it was not enough. To overcome this groundswell of support for Donald Trump.
So with all this, what's the mood like there in Georgia?
Well, I was at the Gwinnett County Elections Commission last night where the ballots were being counted very quickly and efficiently. And, of course, the people working in there were acting very professionally. And there were some observers, but mostly journalists in there. But what I can tell you, what we saw at the polls yesterday, people seemed very, very enthusiastic about participating in the process. We had a record turnout here in Gwinnett County. But Georgia went for Donald Trump. The ground game that the Democrats put on in these swing counties, such as Gwinnett County, I can tell you I observed that. And it was very, very impressive. Same thing that I observed in Pennsylvania. It just wasn't enough. So Democrats are obviously disappointed with all the work that they put into this. They thought that they were going to have a historic president elected, the first African-American woman, first African-American and South Asian woman. It didn't happen. Instead, there's history made by Donald Trump, who will be the 45th and 47th president, the second time in American history where we've had non-consecutive terms. Grover Cleveland did it back in 1892. And along with the capture of the Senate again by the Republicans and maybe the House, it'll take a few days to find out about that. We've got some House districts out in California where it's not been decided. But Donald Trump, Republican, with a Republican Senate, Republican House, and a conservative-leaning Supreme Court, and his desire to test the bounds of executive power, he could end up being one of the most powerful presidents in American history.
VOA national correspondent Steve Herman, see you back in Washington. Thank you.
See you then. Bye-bye.
VOA White House correspondent Patsy Widakuswara was at Howard University here in Washington last night as the results came in. She's on the line now to talk about the scene and reaction. Patsy, thank you so much for joining us. Let me ask you this first. Has the vice president yet conceded the race?
No, she hasn't. But last night, just past midnight, Cedric Richmond, the Harris campaign co-chair, came onto the stage and announced that Vice President Harris was not going to be speaking that night, but she will address the nation today. And so that is the expectation, that Harris will speak sometime later this afternoon to deliver her confession speech. speech, perhaps. We don't know yet whether it's going to be a concession speech, but the expectation is that it will be, because Harris has already committed that she will accept the results of the election.
And Howard University is Harris's alma mater, and she has a lot of support there. What was the scene like there as the results started to roll in last night?
Well, I can sense the mood start to grow somber and more dark at around 10:30, 11 p.m., when more and more states were called for Donald Trump, and the path for Harris to win became more and more narrow. There's definitely a lot less dancing, a lot less laughter, and just faces grew long. And then definitely when the campaign co-chair Cedric Richmond came on stage, the audience there, the supporters, started to feel a little bit more dejected. I spoke with some of them, and they said, you know, well, we were really expecting her to come to speak to us tonight. Others were saying that, you know, tomorrow is another day. They're still hopeful. But overall, I think there's no doubt that the sense of defeat was widely received and felt.
So has the campaign, the Harris campaign, given any reaction or explanation of their loss at all?
No, they haven't. And I don't think that this will be, I mean, this is already discussed by analysts in terms of, you know, why did Harris lose so much? I spoke with some campaign staff and also White House aides last night, and, you know, one of the sense that I got from speaking with them is that maybe we did miscalculate middle America, because that's where the strength of Donald Trump had come from. I think on the issues, you know, immigration and economy became a very powerful turnout motivator for Trump supporters, outweighing the motivator of the issue of abortion that Harris campaign had expected to motivate turnout from women in particular. And the sense overall, particularly what political pundits are pointing out, is that Harris has simply failed to be the agent, the candidate of change that many voters wanted her to be, in particular in distancing herself, explaining to voters how she will be different from Joe Biden.
Okay. Patsy, thank you so much for joining us today. That was VOA White House correspondent Patsy Widakuswara.
You're listening to our special election coverage on VOA's African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I am Lina Ahmoudou. For more coverage of the U.S. elections, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. You also can check out voanews.com.
What does the Trump victory mean? What are some of the ways his new administration, which begins on January the 20th, 2025, could differ from President Joe Biden's administration? A short time ago, I spoke with Ambassador J. Peter Pham, former U.S. Special Envoy to the Sahel, who has served under both Republican and Democratic administrations.
Well, I expect President Trump, he is one of the endearing or frustrating, depending on your point of view, what you see is what you get. And he has campaigned very much on an agenda of revitalizing the United States domestically, economically, but also on the global stage, peace through security. So one should expect him to implement that agenda globally. He is very transparent in that regard, and that's what the American people voted for when they gave him not only the majority needed in the Electoral College, but the first Republicans in 20 years. He also has won the popular vote as well.
What new foreign policy items are likely to change across the globe, particularly in Africa, Mr. Ambassador?
Well, President Trump has always said that he wants partners who are capable, that share the burdens, whether those be NATO allies in Europe, spending what they themselves committed to more than a decade ago to spend on their own defense, but also allies in other areas of the world, including Africa, who are capable, who contribute to America's security, even as America contributes to theirs. And so I expect in Africa that same reciprocity to be at work, whether it be on trade issues, whether it be in issues of national interest, whether it be on security issues. And I expect he will take a very hard look at whether certain commitments are worth American treasure, much less American lives. The Trump administration, President Trump, made the decision to withdraw U.S. forces from Somalia, a decision reversed by the Biden administration. I expect that in a Trump administration, we will look at that again and decide whether the corrupt government in Mogadishu is a fitting partner for the U.S.
That was Ambassador J. Peter Pham, a distinguished fellow with the Atlantic Council's Africa Center and a former U.S. Special Envoy to the Sahel. He spoke with me in our studios at VOA. Reporter Eric Kawa was in Freetown in Sierra Leone last night, where he came upon a group of people watching the election coverage on a TV set. Osman Saliu wondered about what the election says about how the U.S. chooses its leaders.
I get small concern about this day election.
I have some concerns about the American election. America is accepted as the father of democracy. But the method they use in selecting their president, wherein whoever wins the popular vote or does not win the electoral college cannot become the president. That type of democracy is of serious concern to me.
Kawa also spoke with Alpha Diallo about his observations.
The United States election is very, very much unpredictable in recent history. In Sierra Leone especially, people are very curious to know about what is going on over there. And United States is very, very important to the world. So, just fasten your seatbelts and, eyes on your TV.
Meanwhile, reporter Ruben Chama was talking with people in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Angie Kamawiti, a second-year student at the University of Nairobi, wondered about the status now of women's issues.
I was inclined towards Kamala Harris being the next president because of the policies that they championed for, such as the reproductive health rights. The outcome of the elections have gone contrary to my expectations.
Naftali Umawara is a Nairobi-based freelance journalist.
I must say that the U.S. presidential elections were pivotal. They were historic in nature and highly competitive. I was perplexed by the energy and the enthusiasm that both the leading candidates, that's Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, exhibited throughout the process.
Annette Wambiri, a writer of African art and culture, worries about the signals that Trump's election sends.
What are you communicating if you want to be led by a convicted felon with very, very serious charges whose agenda goes against basically everybody who is not white? It's honestly chilling.
Kevin Rotik, a business editor at Capital FM Radio in Nairobi, says the election result could affect Kenya-U.S. ties.
The 2024 U.S. presidential election has been a fierce one. While Kenyans are receptive of Trump's win, they believe their issues will focus less in his administration. This could likely erase some inroads made by his predecessor, Joe Biden, who has been keen on rebuilding economic and political ties with the continent.
We've invited Johanna LeBlanc, a national security law and foreign policy expert here in Washington, D.C., to give us more perspective on the possible foreign policy changes in the coming years. Johanna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, President Trump is going back to the White House the second time. What are the foreign policy implications of a second Trump administration, according to you? And what do you see as some of the priorities on his agenda?
Well, I think it's important to note that Trump is an isolationist. He is a protectionist. and he's also an anti-interventionist. And I think all those philosophy or political foreign policy stances are not necessarily the worst thing that could happen for the African continent. So what that tells us is that President Trump is going to have an America First policy, right? But what's most important is that I think African governments should position themselves to lobby the Trump administration to ensure that the relationship between the United States and African nations are mutually beneficial. I mean, look, under the Trump administration, previous term, he was the one who opened Prosper Africa as a way to increase trade between African countries and the United States, in particular when you're looking at American investors and businesses. And in addition to that, he revamped and remodeled what was called OPIC, which is now called the U.S. Development Finance Corporation, and invested a great deal of money to ensure that folks, investors, are able to secure debt financing for projects in emerging markets, which obviously have an impact on countries in the global south and certainly countries across the African continent. And in addition to that, prior, under the previous initiative, OPIC, there needed to be a nexus between the United States as well as the business owner in the United States in order to be eligible for funding. Well, under the Trump administration, they revamped the model, whereas that nexus does not necessarily need to exist in order to be eligible to apply for funding. So that's one. Secondly, I think that Trump is very transactional. So when it comes to issues around AGOA, right now, the United States' single most important tool, economic tool on the African continent, is the AGOA, which is up for expiration. Mm-hmm. And I think that countries like Uganda that were removed under the Biden and Harris administration could potentially be invited back because obviously Uganda was removed due to human rights violations, in particular due to its legislation that the U.S. deemed to be anti-LGBTQI plus community in the country of Uganda. So I think that because the Trump administration is very transactional, and it's about quid pro quo, I think there's a lot that could be earned for African countries in terms of trade and strengthen bilateral relations. But also it's important to note that Trump is not necessarily interested in strengthening cultural and diplomacy ties. So programs like the Mandela Washington Fellowship Program could be at risk of being of ending under a Trump administration.
Very interesting, because I was going to ask you if you anticipate some significant Africa policy changes in terms of you talked about the Mandela Washington Fellowship, AGOA, PEPFAR, for example. Do you see some major changes?
Yeah, we certainly see that, again, I think, with AGOA, as Russia and China continue to expand their footprint across the African continent, the United States has to be very strategic in ensuring that it has a grip on the continent. And I think that there's going to be a lot more focus on trade relations versus human rights issues. So I think there's also going to be less sanctions being imposed on African nations for human rights, for perceived human rights violations. And also, too, what I think it's important to note is that under a Trump administration, if African governments really, really have a robust lobby strategy in Washington, they can definitely get more out of the United States. And as you, Trump talked about, tariffs, increasing tariffs and so on, I think that's going to hurt countries like China and Mexico, where a lot of domestic production, a lot of manufacturing jobs have gone to those countries, and those jobs could come to the United States. But I think that the African nations could also make an argument that in order for U.S. to maintain its status as a superpower, it must strengthen its relationship with the African continent. You're talking about a continent with a population of 1.4 billion people, with the average age of 19 years, and with the most with all of the critical minerals that are needed for the world to survive. I think it's really important that African governments take the front seat and not the back seat, and be proactive in lobbying this government to ensure that policies coming out of Washington are mutually beneficial.
Okay, Johanna, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight, our special election coverage on VOA's Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington.
And I am Lina Ahmoudou. For more coverage of the U.S. elections, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. You also can check out voanews.com. While the world was closely watching the presidential race, the outcome of the U.S. congressional races could very well determine how much the new president can accomplish. Catherine Gibson is VOA's congressional correspondent, and she joins us now to update us on those races. Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Catherine is not with us for the time being. Let's go to the Dawson interview. Go ahead.
People, news outlets, and governments around the world are reacting to the U.S. presidential election. Journalist Darren Taylor in Johannesburg, South Africa, spoke with VOA editor Kate Pond Dawson about the reaction on the continent.
Kate, I'm picking up from across the continent, various media organizations, many expressing shock, not about Trump's win, but about the margin of his victory. Yet many in Africa expected the race to be much closer, and more than a few headlines say that Trump's victory is the greatest comeback in contemporary political history. South Africa's independent newspaper, for example, calls the result stunning and historic. Kenya's Nation newspaper calls it a remarkable turnaround, given it said that Trump's political career seemed to be over the moment his supporters attacked the Capitol in Washington, D.C. on January the 6th, 2020. I'm staying in Kenya. The East African newspaper headline is Donald Trump wins the U.S. presidency in a stunning comeback. The respected African Business magazine says in commentary says that Trump's dramatic victory is once again likely to trigger a major shift away from U.S. foreign policy and economic orthodoxy, adding that the Republicans' return to the White House will surely spark uncertainty and instability in Africa's emerging economies. In South Africa, Africa's most diversified and most industrialized economy, many of the headlines are about money and how much the rand currency has weakened because of Trump's victory. The Daily Maverick newspaper sums it up perfectly when it says, the rand tanks as Trump poised to return to the White House.
Now, have any African national leaders responded or reacted publicly to the Trump victory?
There's been quite a steady stream of reaction from African leaders. One of the first to congratulate Trump was Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu. A government statement said that President Tinubu looks forward to strengthening relations between Nigeria and the U.S. amid complex challenges and opportunities of the contemporary world. Tinubu said in the statement, together we can foster economic cooperation, promote peace, and address global challenges that affect our citizens. Another prominent African leader who was far up in the queue to congratulate Trump was South Africa's president, Cyril Ramaphosa. In a post on the social media network X, President Ramaphosa said, quote, I look forward to continuing the close and mutually beneficial partnership between our two nations across all domains of our cooperation. Abiy Ahmed, Ethiopia's prime minister, said on X as well, Congratulations to President Donald Trump on your election victory and comeback. Other posts I've seen, Kate, were from Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa and Guinea-Bissau's President Umaro Sisoko Mbalo, who, much along the same lines as what I've previously mentioned, congratulated Trump and again expressed the hope that Trump's victory would spur further economic cooperation between Africa and the U.S.
That was Darren Taylor speaking by phone from Johannesburg with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson. President-elect Trump has received congratulations from dozens of world leaders, including Japan's Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, and Israel's leader Benjamin Netanyahu.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Arab leaders quickly congratulated Donald Trump on his U.S. presidential election victory. Some are hopeful he could bring an end to conflicts raging in the Middle East, while others are looking for a stronger stance against Iran. Dale Gavalak in Amman reports.
Saudi Arabia's King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the United Arab Emirates leaders, and Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad all congratulated Donald Trump on his first presidential win, saying strengthening strategic partnerships is important. Daniel Khaliat Khati, president of the Research Center for Cooperation and Peace Building in Beirut, tells VOA that during the election, Trump emphasized personal ties with such leaders compared to what she called Biden's more transactional approach. Khatib said Arab leaders want Trump to end war in Gaza and Lebanon.
One of his main campaign promises was to end the war in Gaza, but end it how? Will it end with a Palestinian state? We don't know. The thing that is worrying is Netanyahu attacking Iran. This will be major. Handling Iran will not be easy for Trump.
Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has reiterated that his country would not consider improving ties with Israel unless the Gaza war ended and a Palestinian state is established. Wealthy Gulf states have bolstered ties with Iran and given the Islamic Republic assurances that they won't allow Israel to use their airspace to facilitate attacks on Iran. In its response to the elections, Iran played down the result, saying it was ready for confrontation with Israel. Jordan's King Abdullah, Egypt's Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, and Lebanon's caretaker Prime Minister Najib Makati, involved in trying to negotiate an end to the raging conflicts, also congratulated Trump. Analyst Osama al-Sharif in Amman says he believes Trump will pressure Netanyahu to end the conflicts before the presidential inauguration next year.
He will tell Netanyahu boldly to wrap things up before the 20th of January, because those two wars, especially Gaza, have become so toxic and they have become part of the Biden stigma, which eventually also was inflicted on Harris. Trump doesn't need to start his first day at the office with more news of children getting killed and hospitals being blown up.
Al-Sharif tells VOA that Iran will be a big challenge for Trump, who he says is an isolationist who wants to extract America from any conflict. He suggests Trump may tighten the sanctions regime on Iran.
More sanctions. He might be able to communicate with Tehran through Putin, who is now a very close ally of the Iranians. That remains to be seen.
El-Sharif, however, expressed concern that Trump might recognize Israel's annexation of most of the West Bank under Israel's current hard-right government, which he says would complicate things dramatically for both the Palestinians and Jordan. Dale Gavlak, VOA News, Amman, Jordan.
At least six journalists were denied media accreditation to cover Donald Trump's election night watch party, at least one of whom was told it was because of her coverage of the Trump campaign. From Washington, Liam Scott has the story for VOA.
Dozens, if not hundreds of journalists will be at the watch party for Donald Trump, the Republican presidential candidate, at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida on Tuesday night. But at least six won't be allowed in. The journalists from the online news sites Axios, Politico, and Puck were denied credentials by the Trump campaign. A team of four from Politico had initially been approved for the event. On Monday, Politico magazine reported that a white nationalist had been fired from working on the Trump campaign in Pennsylvania. On Tuesday morning, the Politico reporters and photographer were told their credentials had been withdrawn. Politico declined to comment to VOA. The political correspondent for Puck, Tara Palmieri, was publicly denied access by Trump campaign co-manager Chris LaCivita, who cited her coverage. Axios reporter Sophia Tsai was also denied a credential not long after she reported on anxiety within the Trump campaign, according to media reports. Tsai referred VOA to Axios' communications team. In a statement emailed to VOA, Axios editor-in-chief Aja Whitaker Moore defended Tsai, calling her an excellent reporter who has covered the 2024 presidential election with essential clinical coverage. VOA contacted the Trump campaign for comment, but as of early Tuesday evening had not received a response. Liam Scott, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Lina Hmudu in Washington.
And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. Our colleague, Philip Alexio, was on the streets of Washington after it was clear Donald Trump had won the election. He found a mixture of opinions in a city that tends to favor the Democratic Party. Anthony Brown is a Washington resident.
I'm not upset or anything. I'm not happy. I'm not upset or anything like that. At the end of the day, everyone still got a job to do. You know, life goes on, so can't stop. You know, got to keep going. So that's pretty much my thoughts on it. I'm not disappointed at the outcome, and I never think things are going to be okay, so especially when it comes to presidents and just politics in general. One thing that politics have shown us that things are never going to be, you know, okay, or things may look one way, but it's really another way, so.
Linda Winings lives in nearby Prince William County in the state of Virginia.
I have mixed feelings about it. I think I would have liked to have different options. So I had a very hard time making a decision with this election. I believe that God is on his throne. And as long as God is on his throne, which will always be true, then I think everything ultimately will be okay. But in the meantime, we might have some rocky roads.
This woman, who gave her name as Miss Lancaster, lives in Washington, and she was optimistic Americans could stick together.
My personal thoughts, let the country still keep running, let American people still do what they need to do so we can stay together and keep the country running. That's my views on it. We make this country, and we have to keep working together to make the country run.
David Moulton lives in the Washington suburbs of Bethesda, Maryland, and is disappointed in the outcome.
Very disappointed in the direction of the country. Apparently a lot of people feel that way, but for me, the direction we're about to take is going to make things quite dark and a lot worse for my kids.
There were voices of residents. Those were the voices of residents of the Washington, D.C. area. They spoke with VOA journalist Philip Alexio.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends? Breakout artists? New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
With Donald Trump's victory in the 2024 U.S. presidential election, VOA's Tina Trin explores how his past policies and current positions offer insight into the upcoming presidency.
It's official. 78-year-old Donald J. Trump, the former U.S. president, will once again occupy the White House as president of the United States. Like Grover Cleveland in the late 1800s, Trump will serve two non-consecutive terms in office as the 45th and the 47th U.S. president. To understand how a second Trump presidency could play out, it helps to look back at his first term in office and recent claims on the campaign trail. Immigration is a major theme for Trump, and his restrictive policies are tied to his nationalist America First views. Back in 2017, 7 days after he was sworn in, Trump imposed a 90-day travel ban barring citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries from entering the U.S.
I'm establishing new vetting measures to keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the United States of America. We don't want them here.
During this year's presidential campaign, Trump spoke forcefully about what he calls a migrant invasion, making border security a key electoral issue. He told supporters in North Carolina what he would say to Mexico's new president.
I'm going to inform her on day one or sooner that if they don't stop this onslaught of criminals and drugs coming into our country, I'm going to immediately impose a 25% tariff on everything they send in to the United States of America.
During his presidency, Trump imposed tariffs on Chinese imports and seems unlikely to change tactics this time around.
They've really been hurting us. It's so ridiculous. They end up closing. Everybody loses their job. Then they make it in their country, and then they send it back to us with no tax, no nothing. And we lose that. We lose the company. We lose the jobs. We lose sort of everything. And it's so stupid.
Trump pulled the U.S. out of the 2015 Paris Agreement, an international treaty tackling climate change, global warming, and greenhouse gas emissions.
I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Trump says his energy policy will focus on increased domestic oil production and a rollback of environmental regulations.
We're going to, first day, first hour, we can do many things in the first, but first, we're going to drill, baby, drill.
In his second term as president, Trump is promising a more protectionist and isolationist approach than the last 4 years of President Joe Biden. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
As you heard earlier in the show, Donald Trump won enough Electoral College votes to become the U.S. president. The Electoral College is a system unique to the United States and dates back to the early days of the nation. We are presenting again an explanation how the actual process of electing a president works in the U.S. While the U.S. is a democracy, presidents are elected directly by the people. Presidential elections involve what's called the Electoral College, which dates back to the early days of the nation. One candidate must find a way to reach 270 Electoral College votes to win. Todd Belt, professor and director of the Political Management Master's Program at George Washington University, breaks down how the Electoral College voting system works in the U.S. with VOA's Carol Van Damme. They start by discussing how this two-party system works.
So it's a two-part process. First, the political parties in each state choose the slates of potential electors. And then second, during the election, the voters in each state cast their ballot for president, but they're really selecting basically their electors, right?
They're selecting one slate of electors or the other, yes.
I think a lot of people are curious, what types of people get chosen to be these electors and who chooses them?
These are party insiders who are committed to one candidate over another.
That's it in a nutshell.
That's really it. Yeah. You have to apply to be an elector and you get certified by the presidential campaign that you want to be the elector for.
Let's talk a little bit about the mistrust that has been sown into this election. There's more than a few voters that have talked about this with this particular U.S. election process. And how much does that factor in to this razor-thin election? And what will it mean if the election results don't go the way that they, those voters, mm-hmm. expect them to go? What could that mean for our country?
Right. Well, we already know that Donald Trump is casting doubt on the integrity of the election, as he did in 2020. And I think that both sides have close to a dozen lawyers each and are preparing for potential lawsuits. And that may occur where there may be challenges of the electoral count in different states. And I think that this does a real damage to our trust in our institutions and democracy. If we can't really be a democracy that runs on the will of the people if people don't believe that the will of the people is being expressed through the ballot. And that is problematic.
Is there a reason for people to be suspicious of the way the U.S. election process works?
No, the U.S. election process is extremely safe and secure. In fact, Donald Trump's own Homeland Security person said that it was the safest election in 2020 and most secure that we've ever had.
What about field operations? It seems like we're mm-hmm. hearing in these battleground states, these seven that you have talked about, is that mm-hmm. Harris, the vice president, Kamala Harris, has far more paid staff members,
That's
field
right.
offices, too. Is that true? It sounds like you're saying yes. And how much does that make a difference?
There's a real difference in terms of the approach of both candidates. Traditionally, these field offices are extremely important, but Donald Trump is not a regular candidate. He takes more of a top-down approach. He likes to appeal to people through the media, through the podcast, through social media, and try to get his voters out that way. Whereas you see Kamala Harris running a much more traditional campaign. And in fact, these field offices were really established when Joe Biden was running for president. And Joe Biden had a real strong fundraising advantage because it takes money to rent offices and pay staff and to get them out there. So she has a much bigger advantage in all these swing states in terms of having the offices and the paid staff and a lot of volunteers. But that's really about getting people out on election day and convincing what few people who are there, going door to door, knocking on doors, making telephone calls, and speaking to people's neighbors. The ground game is still very important. In fact, Trump actually had a pretty good ground game in 2020, and Biden didn't want to use the ground game too much in 2020 because of COVID, because he thought that it would send a message that COVID wasn't as serious as it was. So it really depends on the presidential candidate and the type of campaign that they're trying to put together.
That's Todd Belt, professor and director of the Political Management Master's Program at George Washington University. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Vander.
In just over 9 years, former and now future President Donald Trump has reshaped the Republican Party. We're bringing you again a look at Donald Trump's political career. VOA's Tina Tran reports from New York.
The Fox News Decision Desk can now project that former Vice President Joe Biden
has been elected President of the United States.
It was supposed to be the end. But when the end came, Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States, wasn't ready to admit defeat.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us.
Trump urged supporters to prevent Congress from certifying those results on January 6, 2021.
We fight like hell, and if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
What resulted was a scene previously unimaginable in America that led to his second impeachment. Trump's unwillingness to take no for an answer was on brand for a man who has always burned convention.
I think what you see is somebody who has incredible confidence in his own intuition.
Russ Mutner and Suzanne Craig are New York Times investigative reporters and co-authors of Lucky Loser, an unflattering look at how Trump fashioned himself into a self-made billionaire.
He has not, since the early 80s, really trusted people who have subject area expertise in almost anything. He will always overrule them to make things the way he wants them to turn out.
Trump's buildings were emblazoned with his name in large gold letters, a brash display of his ambition and self-promotion.
He was worth $200 million when he would talk. It was the interview he gave to the New York Times, and that grew to $1 billion when he was talking to 60 Minutes a decade later.
Trump excelled at drawing attention and cultivating a brand for himself as a dealmaker. He made millions licensing his name. But behind the success were troubles. His companies filed for bankruptcy 6 times. His casinos lost money and were shuttered. Trump rebounded with his TV show, The Apprentice, which led to his biggest role yet.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am officially running for President of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again.
Unapologetic and unfiltered, Trump was a polarizing nationalist candidate.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
As president, Trump appointed 3 Supreme Court justices who helped overturn federal abortion rights.
The U.S. death toll now above 150,000.
In early 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic tested Trump. He fast-tracked the development of life-saving vaccines, but he also appeared to suggest that scientists study injecting bleach to kill the virus. With over 9 million Americans infected and a death toll exceeding 230,000, voters that November chose Joe Biden as their next president. Out of office, Trump faced multiple criminal indictments and is the first former president to be a convicted felon. And yet, he has never been more popular than he is now. Surviving 2 assassination attempts this year has only strengthened the bond between him and his supporters.
God has a plan for Trump, and he absolutely was spared for some purpose and reason, and hopefully it's to become the 47th president.
American politics has never been the same since Donald Trump entered the field. And the man who once co-authored The Art of the Comeback may now be engineering one of the biggest in American history. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
VOA. VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And in news from the continent, Mozambique's capital was tense today ahead of a freedom march called by the opposition following weeks of protests against election results that have left at least 18 people dead. The French news agency AFP reports that shops and banks in Maputo closed early and the streets were emptier than usual, while police and military vehicles were stationed at various points. The Southern African country has been locked in a political crisis since the election authority announced that the Frelimo party in government for nearly 50 years won the October 9th ballot. Opposition leader Venancio Mondlane, who said the vote was fraudulent and that he won, has called his supporters onto the streets of Maputo on Thursday for what he called our Freedom Day. Human Rights Watch said yesterday that security forces have killed at least 18 protesters since the election.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And that wraps up this special edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Lina Khnoudou in Washington.
And I'm Yehiyes Wuhib. Check out voaafrica.com and voanews.com for the latest updates. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Tien Wong, Thanks for choosing The Voice of America. We'll be back tomorrow with more U.S. election news, and we'll be following up with changes that Trump announces before and after his inauguration in January.